The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it. We can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So I'm going to be talking about the conceit of I, the conceit of self. And it's very interesting because I was reading, I've been reading a book called The Island, which is an anthology. It's an anthology of the Buddhist teachings on nirvana, written by Ajahn Pasano and Ajahn Amaro, two Theravadan bhikkhus. And I came across this teaching on the conceit of I, and I was really struck by it. And I hadn't really looked at things that way before. Well, maybe in some ways, but not exactly. And when I was asked to do a Dharma talk, I decided to talk about this. And I didn't find out till later that Rev. Master Daishin was planning to talk about the same thing yesterday for those who came on Saturday. So this wasn't something, you know, that we discussed and decided was really important for the lay people. But it was just a coincidence. But I decided to go ahead and talk about it anyway because I think we'll probably say things very differently. So at any rate, the conceit of I, we're used to thinking of conceit as being conceited, that I am great, I'm better than, in that way. But in the Pali word mani, it has a broader sense to the word conceit. And it is the conceit of there just being an I itself, the moment-to-moment sense of there is an I, there is a me. And the Buddha talked about the three conceits, and they are the conceit of superiority, or I am better than, the conceit of I am equal to, or I am the same as, and the conceit of I am worse than, I am inferior to. So all of these are conceits. And when we think that we are worse than others, it's actually something that needs to be let go of. Just as when we think we are better than others or equal to others. And I'm just going to read what the Buddha said, which was just, you know, one little section here, where he said, the equality conceit, the inferiority conceit, and the superiority conceit, this threefold conceit should be overcome. That one who has overcome this threefold conceit through the full penetration of conceit is said to have put an end to suffering. Those samanas and brahmins who, relying on the impermanent, unsatisfying, and transitory nature of material form, feelings, perceptions, mental formations, and consciousness, conceive that I am better, or I am equal, or I am worse. All these imagine thus through not understanding reality. And the conceit of an I is the eighth of 10 fetters on our way to enlightenment. So it's pretty far along, and it's said that you don't overcome this fetter until you're very close to becoming a Buddha. So the fact that we all have this conceit, as I'm going to be talking about more, is not something to feel badly about. It's just human nature. And since we all aren't that close to becoming Buddha, well, I can't say all of you. I can say for myself. looking at the other fetters, I still have quite a few to overcome. But this is something that we can work on, and this can help us with our suffering. So as the Buddha said, all these conceits are based on wrong view and result in dukkha, in suffering. So I decided to go to the internet to look up the conceit of I. And I did find it. And I found a few things that I would like to read to you. And one is a paragraph I found by Christina Feldman. And this is what she says. The conceit of self is said to be the last of the great obstacles to full awakening. Conceit is an ingenious creature, at times masquerading as humility, empathy, or virtue. Conceit manifests in the feelings of being better than, worse than, and equal to another. Within these three dimensions of conceit are held the whole tormented world of comparing, evaluating, and judging that afflicts our hearts. Jealousy, resentment, fear, and low self-esteem spring from this deeply embedded pattern. Conceit perpetuates the duality of self and other, the schisms that are the root of the enormous alienation and suffering in our world. Our commitment to awakening asks us to honestly explore the ways in which conceit manifests in our lives and to find the way to its end. So I'd like to talk a bit about how conceit manifests itself in our lives, and also how we can find at least the beginning of the end, because I think the end isn't going to come for a long time. Well, just looking within ourselves. And seeing where this conceit arises. After reading about this, I meditated in my room, and I saw the conceit arise many times in just, I didn't do that right, I am bad. Just in the thoughts that arose, I should do this, I shouldn't do that. I don't think anything arose saying I'm a wonderful person. But I think for some people that does arise. And I think from what I've heard, that's actually harder for people to feel. Pride is actually harder than feeling awful about oneself, according to some people I have talked to. And I just watched it. I just watched those feelings come and go without engaging in them. And I felt at peace. And I thought, well, great. This is the answer, you know, just letting go of this self. Well, of course, as if I didn't know that, you know. But this was just another way of looking at it. And I found it really helpful. But of course, that was right after reading this teaching that inspired me, and it was alone in my room meditating. And in fact, the next day, I encountered this in daily life, and I can assure you it was not as easy as the night before. So, and I found this interesting because I was having a meeting with the other guest monks, and I'm the guest master. And I found that this type of meeting caused a lot of stress for me because I'm the one who's supposed to be in charge, or sort of, overseeing the meeting at least. And I found myself wanting to control it, you know, wanting it to come out a certain way. And of course it didn't. And my buttons, for those of you who know what buttons are, were being pushed. My koan was arising very strongly. And I could see it all happening. And yet I couldn't do anything about it. The buttons were pushed so strongly that I actually didn't see a way out. And I finally reacted in a way that I was not so happy about and felt badly about myself. So I went for a walk, and I just allowed myself to feel these feelings. And not to try and make anything better, but just to be with how I felt. And I came back, and I apologized, and I saw a way to do things differently that worked for me. So I had compassion for myself, that our habits, our ways of doing things, the way we react, the self, it's very ingrained. And maybe it's a way we think of protecting ourselves in a certain way, but we react in certain ways to certain situations. So it's learning to be compassionate and kind to ourselves and not use this as an opportunity to increase that conceit, the third one, of I am worse than, I am bad. But just to let it go and see how I can do better. I was also looking at how often does this conceit arise during the day? When we are being mindful, we can see when it arises. And this is one of the ways to train with it, to be mindful and see where it arises. And I found for myself that it arises quite a bit. I'll be just going about my daily life, and I see someone being kind to someone else. And sometimes I'm just really touched by that kindness, but sometimes it stirs up in me, I wish I were a kind person. And I see someone being generous or making an offering. Oh, I wish I was a generous person. I wish it was just natural for me to be generous and kind instead of having to work at it. So the self... Anyway, for me, I'm not in anybody else's mind, but the way my mind works is it's coming up a lot. And in fact, in talking to some people about pride, they would say it's actually harder for them when pride arises. But you actually treat pride and I don't know if you call it feeling worthless or feeling lousy about yourself in the exact same way. You just let it go. It's just a thought. It's just a feeling. And you just let it come and let it go. And the opposite of judging ourselves or watching what happens within ourselves when we see other people that we think are doing better than us is the judgment of others. And that perhaps is the superiority conceit. All the judgments. Why are they doing things that way? You know, I wouldn't do it that way. Or just, you know, watching all the judgments that arise about other people. So it's the judgments of self and the judgments of other people. And the mindfulness of this really helps us to see it the willingness to just see it and let it go, and then the trusting and the courage and the faith to just be with what's there when you let all these things go. The faith to trust that there's something deeper within ourselves, that we can let this go, that we don't have to be constantly monitoring ourselves in this way. The courage to look at what arises when we let these things go. The courage to turn towards ourselves, to turn towards fear, and to just be with it. This takes faith and courage. And I was talking to someone the other day about, and she was saying that she knew what to do, but she just wasn't doing it. And I don't know if she was scared. I think that was part of it. And we talked about taking baby steps. You know, if you feel like you're just too scared to let go, then just notice things as they arise and see an opportunity. An opportunity will arise where you can see, I can let go. And then as you do let go, as you do face your fears and the suffering that's within yourself, you see that I can do this. And that gives you the faith to continue to do it. And also, you see, as I saw that evening when I let go in meditation, that what you find is peace. I also came across another article on the internet, which I found very helpful in explaining the different ways in which this conceit arises. And, you know, in thinking about this Dharma talk, I thought, well, I do. She talks about peace and being nobody. And I thought, well, that's what I've always longed for, is peace. That's what we long for, to be still, to be at peace with ourselves. And yet, looking at what she said, I thought, I do some of that. So we want peace, but sometimes we go in the opposite direction. So I'm not going to read the whole article because that would take up too much time. But I'm going to read parts of it. Peace is very hard to find anywhere. One of the reasons must be not only that it's difficult to attain, but also that very few people work for such an achievement. It seems as if it were a negation of life, of one's own supremacy. Only those who practice a spiritual discipline would care to direct their minds towards peace. And of course, we are all those who practice a spiritual discipline. So when she talks about how rare it is for someone to want peace, I think that's in the world in general. But I think within people who train here, it is common. A natural tendency is to cultivate one's own superiority, which also often falls into the other extreme, one's own inferiority. When one has one's own superiority in mind, it's impossible to find peace. The only thing that one can find is a power game. Anything you can do, I can do better. Or at times when it's quite obvious that this isn't so, then anything you can do, I can't do as well. This kind of stance, which is very common, is the opposite of peacefulness. A display of either one's own abilities or the lack of them will produce restlessness rather than peace. There's always the reaching out, the craving for a result in the form of other people's admittance of one's own superiority or their denial of it. When they deny it, there is warfare. When they admit it, there is victory. And I don't see this as only reaching out for superiority, but just reaching out for acceptance. I think that's a very common thing. Or reaching out to find out that one is okay, or that one is just equal. But it's a reaching out. Victory over other people has its underlying cause, a battle. In war, there is never a winner. There are only losers. No matter who signs the peace treaty first, both sides lose. The same applies to this kind of attitude. There are only losers. Even though one may have a momentary victory, having been accepted as the one who knows better, or just as the one who is accepted, or is stronger or cleverer, battle and peace do not go well together. And in reading this, and looking what happened at that meeting, I found that I actually was in a battle. I didn't realize it, but there was something in it about my own supremacy and the self that wanted something. And I certainly hadn't intended it to be that way, but the self is just arises a lot. One wonders in the end, does anybody really want peace? Nobody seems to have it. Well, I don't agree with that. Is anybody really trying to get it? One does get in life what one strongly determines. It is important to inquire into our innermost heart whether peace is really what we want. The inquiry into one's heart is a difficult thing to do. Most people have a steel door of thick dimensions which is covering the opening of their heart. And I would say I would not agree with that in terms of people who are training. They can't get in to find what's going on inside. But everyone needs to try to get in as far as possible and check one's priorities. She talks about being nobody, being a somebody and being a nobody. A somebody never has peace. When one is nobody and has nothing, then there is no danger of warfare or attack. Then there's peace. It seems to be so much more ingrained in us and so much more important to be somebody than to have peace. So we need to inquire with great care what we are truly looking for. What is it that we want out of life? If we want to be important, appreciated, loved, then we have to take their opposites in stride also. Every positive brings with it a negative, just as the sun throws shadows. If we want one, we must accept the other, without moaning about it. See, I wrote here something that I think was good, but I can't remember what I meant by it. So I think I'll wait and see if it comes back to me. But if we really want a peaceful heart and mind, inner security and solidity, then we have to give up wanting to be somebody, anybody at all. Body and mind will not disappear because of that. What disappears is the urge and the reaching out and the affirmation of the importance and supremacy of this particular person called me. Wanting to be somebody is dangerous. It's like playing with a burning fire into which one puts one's hand all the time and it hurts constantly. Nobody will play that game according to our own rules. People who really manage to be somebody like heads of state invariably need a solid bodyguard around them because they are in danger of their lives. Nobody likes to admit that someone else is more important. One of the major deterrents to peace of mind is the somebody of our own creation. So be content to be nobody. That's what really makes us happy. That is what, that is the way to peace. And it's hard work. We don't actually make ourselves nobody. We already are nobody. So, in that sense of the word, we just have to let go of the self. Just let go, yes. It's so ingrained in us to judge ourselves and others, to believe in the commentary that goes on in our minds. And getting reassurance and the other things that we look for outside ourselves is never enough. It's like greed. We get something and it's never enough. The self always wants more. And I like what Aya Kama says about putting your hand in the fire. We have to keep putting our hand in the fire and keep wanting reassurance or keep wanting acceptance or keep wanting to win an argument. It never ends until we start working on this within our lives. With compassion. With lots of compassion. The last thing I'm going to read in this article is, in the world we live in, we can find people, animals, nature, and man-made things. Within all that, if we want to be in charge of anything, the only thing we have any jurisdiction over is our own heart and mind. If we really want to be somebody, we could try to be that rare person, the one who is in charge of his or her own heart and mind. To be somebody like that is not only very rare, but also brings with it the most beneficial results. Such a person does not fall into the trap of the defilements. Although the defilements may not be uprooted yet, he won't commit the error of displaying them and getting involved with them. I don't know if I want to say some of these things anymore. They seem good at the time. Ajahn Chah, couple of sentences from Ajahn Chah says, looking outside the self is to compare and to discriminate. You will not find happiness that way. Nor will you find peace if you spend more time looking for a perfect person or the perfect teacher. The Buddha taught us to look at the Dharma, the truth, and not to look to other people. So what helps us with this is looking within ourselves. When the longing and the desire for reassurance or wanting someone to like us or whatever it is that we look to from other people, when that desire arises, you know, be aware of it, and look within yourself, because you'll find within yourself what you are truly looking for. And I think we all long for peace. We just we sometimes forget where it is. And the last thing I'm going to read, well, this turned out, I was afraid this would be too long, but it, I think it's turning out to be fairly short. This is something that the Buddha said. Seclusion is happiness for one content, who knows the Dharma, who has seen. Friendship with the world is happiness for those restrained toward all beings. Dispassion amidst the world is happiness for those who let go of sense desires. But the end of the conceit I am, that's the greatest happiness of all. Well, I can't resist one last small quote, which which is, again, Ajahn Chah. Looking for peace is like looking for a turtle with a mustache. You won't be able to find it, but when your heart is ready, peace will come looking for you. So I would just say, do your training, continue your training, notice these things, know that it's good to let go of them. Know that it's good to look within ourselves and be willing to look at our fears and our suffering, and know that peace will find us. Thank you.